Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome Paul Maskell to the show. Now, he is going to share with us how systematizing your business and building a team who can run the business better than you can move you much more forward than you thought could even happen as a solopreneur. So in 2011, after less than 4 years in corporate America, Paul knew that there was more to life than just doing a job that's okay. We've all been there for 40 years, and then you retire and enjoy life for, what, 10, 11 years? I've watched my grandparents, you know, work, and then just they didn't know what to do. It was really sad. I've learned that I don't want to do that, and Paul did too. He ventured out and started his first business in 2011, and he was soon working 60 to 80 hours a week with a business that could not survive without him. So Paul started systematizing everything, and before he knew it, his revenue doubled to almost $500,000, while the number of hours he worked dropped below 40. He then sold his business for 3 times net profit and is now back into business ownership with 2 local businesses, while also helping ambitious business owners automate their business so they can leverage their business, whatever it is, to build a life that they love. Paul, welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. It's good to have you here.
Thanks, Denise. Excited to be here.
Listen, been there, done it. I mean, I started my business, I don't even know how long ago now, and I did exactly the same thing. I mean, I was working what seemed to be around the clock. I was panicking all of the time. Anxiety levels were high, just because I'm a perfectionist, I think. But I also made the biggest mistake, which was not creating systems and which was not building a team. You know, I was cocky enough to think that I could do it all myself. Big mistake. I learned the hard way. It sounds like you did as well.
Yeah, I did. And unfortunately, we as humans, especially if we're entrepreneurs, we think we can do it all ourselves. We don't need anybody. And we're kind of hard-headed. And we think we can do whatever we want, whenever we want, until we've reached that breaking point. So unfortunately, many business owners go through that. So my goal, my vision, my mission is to help them not do that and avoid it before it becomes a huge problem.
And, you know, and I have to ask you, because one of the things when people ask me to mentor them sometimes, you know, particularly about building a digital, you know, kind of a company or even a podcast, and they'll say, well, I just don't have the money to hire somebody. My first thing is, you better find it, because you will go broke and you will go mad before the year is out. So what kind of advice do you have for people who just, oh, I need to do it myself? You know, I don't have income coming in. I've got to do this myself. What do you tell them?
Yeah, so, I mean, first, I think more of it's a mindset. So if you look at employees or anything to grow your business as an expense instead of investment, then you're always going to think that no matter what you buy, you're going to say, why would I pay for that when I could do it myself? And what you really need to understand is, how valuable is your time? What could you pay somebody else to do that so you could go make more money? So it is an investment, but you will get a return on your investment. And that was the same way. Like you said, I left my job, started my business, and I was working 60 to 80 hours a week, but I loved it. Like, I legit loved what I was doing. We were working with kids. We were making a difference in the community, building business. But I got to the point where I literally couldn't grow the business anymore because I had no more time of the day. I had no more mental energy, and there was a demand in the market. So then I asked myself, well, how can I keep growing this? And it brought me to the question of, what would happen if I got hit by a bus? Because I realized at that point, so much of this business was built on my back. So it was basically building a house of cards. And if something happened to me, it would all come tumbling down. And my wife would not be happy about that. My employees that I did have would not be happy. And my customers would be upset. And we wouldn't be able to basically keep making money. So if something did happen to me, or, you know, if I did have to be in the hospital, or if I did have to go take care of my family who lives in a different state, whatever it might be, I wouldn't be able to do that. So I was basically in a worse position than I was before, when at least I had a job. I could get paid vacation and I had the benefits and all that. So I didn't need that. I left my job because it didn't make a big difference to me, but I also wanted to be in a position where, why did I start this business in the first place? And it was because I wanted to be able to have that freedom. I wanted to be able to make more money and I wanted to be able to make a bigger difference. So, you know, once I realized that, then it was, you know, I didn't look at it as this person's costing me something. I was like, I can pay this person $15 an hour. My time is worth more than that because I can either go grow the business, which I was able to do, but I was also able to work on the business, which allowed me to continue to put these parts and pieces and foundation in place so that we did have a solid foundation to build the business as big as we wanted to. So yeah, short term, you didn't get a return on that investment, but long term, the return is, you know, infinite almost.
Exactly. And it took me the longest kind of, I'm embarrassed to say how long it took me to do that, but I'm one of those people, you know, I have a terrific team now. They've been with me for most of them a decade or better. I mean, they're really terrific. Most of them are they're all contractors. I don't have full-time employees. But all of them have their own mad skill sets. And I had to learn, and I bet you did too, that when you're bringing people on board, you need to find people who are better at whatever it is that you want them to do than you are. And I never ask my team to do something I can't already do myself, you know, because I need to know how to guide them and ask them, you know, for, you know, what do they think about this? What can they recommend that we do differently? And I was working myself insane because I could do it all. I really could. But I couldn't do it fast. I couldn't be all that efficient because I was tired. I was being pulled in 100 different directions. And I finally just sat down and had a chat with myself. It got ugly. I think I cried. But the thing is, you have to bring in people who are better at some of this stuff than you are because that's what they do. That's what their skill set is. You're not asking them to do 100 things at a time. Does that make sense?
For sure, yeah. And I think, you know, what you said there is so true. And it's really understanding that you don't have to do everything. Just because you can do everything doesn't mean you have to do everything. And I 100% agree that you need to know how to do it so you can have these intelligent conversations with the people you're delegating to, but also for a level of respect, because we've all been in those jobs where it's like, hey, Denise, figure this out. You know, here's your task. And then you say, well, how do I do it? And we just say, well, figure it out. Well, then it's like, I don't have any respect for my boss because he doesn't have the empathy of, you know, and I don't even have the skill set. And I didn't sign up to figure this out on my own. I signed up to be an employee. If they could figure it out on their own, they'd be their own boss and they'd be running their own business. So getting over that hump that just because you can do everything doesn't mean you should. And just think how much more effective you could be if all you had to do was one or two things and everybody on your team only had to do one or two things. Then the, you know, really it's exponential potential after that because, hey, we all know what we're doing. We know why we're doing it and we know where we're going. So let's get on this and do it together. So, you know, and I was in the same boat. I was so scared to delegate. It was my baby. Nobody could do it as well as I could. I couldn't find good help. There's nobody I could trust. All those excuses, which they are, they're just excuses that we tell ourselves to stay where we're at, even though we don't like being where we're at, until I remembered back when I quit my job. So when I quit my job, I told myself, well, what happens if I quit my job, start my own business, and it doesn't work? Well, if it doesn't work, at least I don't have the regret of getting to the end of my life and saying, man, I wish I would have started my own business. But really, the worst case scenario was it crashes and burns and I go back and get another job. So once I remembered that when I was delegating, I realized, you know, if I delegate all this stuff, and obviously you have to have a plan, a strategy, systems, processes, all that. But say I delegated to somebody and it just doesn't work out. Well, where is that work or that, you know, responsibility going to come back to? It's going to come back to me, which is where it is already. So if it's already with me, that really is the worst case scenario, which means I am living in the worst case scenario, even though it's not life or death. But we get so scared. We have all this fear. We have all these inner voices. And here's the fact is that never happens. The worst case scenario is never as bad as we think it'll be because we are human beings and we at least put some parameters. We do some planning and some strategy to make sure it doesn't happen. We just don't trust ourselves. And we don't like change, so we'll just stay where we're at, even though we're miserable.
Exactly. And I'm glad you brought up the worst-case scenario. I mean, we do this all the time in business and in life. I mean, how many times have you created this entire conversation with somebody that never took place? Once you got on the phone or in person, it just went a completely different direction and was almost always much better than you could possibly envision it. I don't know why we do that to ourselves. I mean, I've got probably
I have no idea.
I could probably write a book on all the imaginary conversations I've had with people that just didn't happen. And they had no business happening, to be honest with you. So it's just, I don't know why we do that. We live, I think we run around in our little squirrel brains and make up stuff just so we can put things off. That's what I think.
Well, yeah, because we don't like doing new things. Our human brain is basically designed to keep us alive, and we're alive. So why go do something else? So, you know, going back thousands of years, it's like if I go around that corner, there might be like a saber-toothed tiger or like a dinosaur or something. It's like, so I'm going to stay right here because I know if I stay right here, I'm still going to survive, even though if I'm not, you know, I don't totally love it. So being able to kind of crack that and realize the only way we're going to get to where we want to go is getting comfortable, being uncomfortable, and getting used to pushing ourselves out of our comfort zone. Just like when we started our business, that was a big leap. So why don't we keep making these big leaps? And we never do them without thinking about it. So like the worst case, we're not going to die. You know, our business isn't life or death. It's supposed to be fun. So figuring out what is really holding me back. And usually it's, well, what are the people going to think? Or what if this happens? Or what if that happens? But, you know, we usually plan well enough, and I encourage everybody to plan well enough to make sure that risk is mitigated. You're not just going to quit your job tomorrow. You're not just going to go fire all your clients tomorrow or do something drastic. It's going to be, what is the downside and what is the upside? And not just financially, but mentally, like, do you want to have the regret of saying, man, I wish I would have put a team in place because now I really realize I should have did that 10 years ago. And I didn't want that regret. I'd rather do something, take the calculated risk with the understanding of, this is the only way I'm going to get better. And the only way humans have ever learned is by making mistakes, because you don't learn from doing something right, because you don't know it's right until it crashes and burns. So once it crashes and burns, what can we do to make sure it doesn't crash and burn again? I mean, that's just being a human.
Exactly. And you mentioned a bit ago, or one of us did, we were talking about, you know, why we don't bring on good teams and we're making excuses. So one of the things that we talked about in the pre-interview was, you said something about why I can't find good help is simply an excuse to not take action. I know that's true because I've done it myself. I mean, it's part of that whole, oh, I can do it myself. I can, you know, my big excuse, well, one of them was, well, they're not going to do it the way I want to do it because guess what? I'm kind of bossy. I'm an A-type personality. That doesn't necessarily work when you're trying to, you know, build a team and bring them on board. And I had to learn that, you know, I needed to find people who were better at some things than I was. That was a tough one to swallow. But once I did, I was like, oh, and this was very, very important for me because this took away my excuses. I needed to bring my team, you know, into the bigger picture. Maybe one was working on WordPress. Maybe one was working on, you know, the WooCommerce or whatever it was going to be. Maybe somebody was helping with podcast building. But if they had the bigger picture of what the client needed, then they could go into their skill sets and their knowledge and their years of experience and go, well, Denise, I see where you're going with this. What do you think about this? And once I loosened up my brain a little bit to, you know, have other people give me suggestions, things changed big time. So I had no more excuses, is my point.
Yeah, and that's really, I mean, he was one of the very first guests on my podcast. He said, your excuses, I think his name was Doug Parker. He said, your excuses only sound good to you, because we can always justify between our two ears in our head why we're not doing something or why we are doing something. We can always justify it, you know, and it'll make sense to us and nobody else. But that simply is an excuse, because the reason is because there's plenty of business out there with a lot of good help. So if they can do it, why can't you? The key is obviously having a strategy, having a plan, maybe having a guide, and then having the systems and processes in place. So just to dive into that a little bit, what most businesses do is they don't hire somebody until it's like a 5-alarm fire. It's like, oh, this person quit, or oh, this person didn't show up. We need a new hire. So you literally go out and hire the next person with a heartbeat. And that's why you can't find good help, because you're reacting instead of proactive, you know, being reactive instead of proactive. So if you look at your recruiting efforts, like marketing, we're always trying to market. We're always trying to go get new customers. But why aren't we always trying to go get better employees, better talent? So, you know, if you look at the really successful businesses in the world, they're always recruiting, even if they don't have a spot on their team at the moment. So that is part of their daily routine, because they know, and I know, and you know, that without a team, you don't even have a business. You're simply self-employed and just, you know, basically you took all the risk to be a business owner, but you're not reaping any of the rewards. So that's why, in my opinion, it is simply an excuse, because if other people can do it, so can you. They're not any more special than you are.
True. So you've talked about the five systems that every business owner really has to perfect. Can you share those with us?
Yeah. So, you know, even kind of getting kind of backtracking before that, you know, what are some of the things that everybody needs to do in order to kind of put all these systems and processes in place? And the first thing that I really realized is, When I'm working with business owners, and my own personal journey is, I didn't really know why I was doing what I was doing. What is this going to help me get to? When I first started my business, it was just to not have a boss. I didn't want to sit in a cubicle. I didn't want to be in corporate America. I just didn't want to be my own boss. But that really isn't a vision, and that really isn't why I'm doing this. Like, there needs to be something bigger to work towards, because eventually it kind of sucks being your own boss, because, you know, there isn't anybody telling you what to do. And you don't really know what you need to do, and you don't really know why you're doing it. So, you know, kind of going through the step-by-step process, first, everyone needs to figure out, what is your personal vision of your life? What does your ideal life look like? Why are you doing what you're doing? Is it so you can have more time, you know, with your family, or spend more time with aging parents, or go to more kids' soccer games, or travel more, or whatever it is, you know, spend more time in charitable contributions, whatever it is. But once you have that personal drive, that personal vision, that personal mission, then it makes a little bit easier to start figuring out, what do you actually need to do today? And once you know where you want to go personally, then we need to go. So this is kind of the second step in the process of, then you need to know, well, what kind of business do I actually need to build in order to make that happen? And I'm pretty sure none of those businesses look like a one-man band or a one-woman band where you're doing everything and churning everything out 24/7, 365, because that's not sustainable. So what kind of organization do you need to build in order to make that personal vision, that life dream happen? Because you can make it happen. And then how much, you know, then getting to the pure measurables, how much money does that business need to make in order to support that? How much money do you need to make in order to support that? So now you know exactly where you want to go, and you know what vehicle, which is your business, is going to get you there. So once you've done that, that's kind of the second step of getting to all these systems. The third step is actually proactively making time to start implementing and working on these things. So most business owners, they walk into their office and it's like, okay, what fires are going to come up today? What am I going to react to today? And there is no proactive strategy at all. It's just, hey, I walk in at 8 and I put out fires until 6, and then I go home. Nobody wants to see me, so I work some more, and then I get up and do it again. So making time, even if it's 30 minutes a day, to start to work on your business. And that could be something like evaluating the obstacles, figuring out what are your distractions, figuring out what your key performance indicators are, and then eventually getting to spending that time on building out your five systems, which takes us to your initial question. So what are the five systems that every business has to have? Well, your business already has them. They just need to become actual systems. So if you just follow the customer journey, that's the easiest way, in my opinion, to figure out what your five systems are. So the first system is lead generation. So the activities you do to stir interest into your business. So people say, hey, I like what you're saying. Can we continue this conversation? So what are your lead generation activities? What is your marketing efforts? That then leads to sales, turning these potential customers into real customers. So that's your second system. So you have the lead generation, and then you have the sales, and now it's time to turn them into a customer. So this is kind of where the other three systems lie. So the next one is all about the customers, the customer service / customer experience. So that's one system. The customer service is, how do you react to things that come your way? So phone calls, emails, kind of reacting to problems. And then the customer experience is, how do you take all that and turn it into a proactive, you know, environment where you're doing things before they become problems and wowing your customers and creating the best experience possible. So that's the third one. And then the fourth one is the actual service that you provide. So that is a system within itself, whatever service it is or whatever product you sell, how you do it. That is the fourth system. And then the last one is kind of the one that nobody really loves. It's the operation. So all the things that go on in the background, the foundation, the standard operating procedures, the financials, all the things that make sure your business continues to do what it does, those are the five systems. So, you know, focusing on those and doing everything before we even get into talking about how do we systematize, how do we automate, how do we delegate, first you need to visually see those things and how they all fit together to get you back to your vision, back to your mission, building that ideal organization. And then thinking about what are each of the processes within each system that help make that system go. So process is just, you know, enough. Each system is built on a bunch of processes. So your lead generation system, there's a bunch of processes, bunch of activities that you do that now we need to document and do in a systematic way.
So there you're talking about standard operating procedures, which are critical. Anybody listening, this is probably one of the most important things that you need to work on. And you're going to be working on it all the time because things change. So I do have some questions about that. But you were talking about, you caught my ear, if you will, when you were talking about customer service and customer experience. Those are two vastly different things. And I notice that a lot of people are, you know, they're really concentrating, as they should, on customer service, but they may not really understand the difference between that and the customer experience. Can we chat about that a bit?
Yeah, so I think this is where it changes the conversation for a lot of people. So customer service is, I mean, yes, you have to do it well, but every company has customer service, even if it's bad. It's like, hey, how do you reach me? How do I solve your problems? But customer experience is really how you set yourself apart. So when you realize that whatever service you provide or whatever product you sell, that is a commodity, which basically means I can go get it from many places. And the customer really doesn't care. Like, I don't really care because I can get my grass cut by 100 different people within 5 miles of my house. That's a commodity. I can find it anywhere. What you can't find is the customer experience. And most businesses totally ignore this because they're just chasing the next dollar. Once that person says, yep, I want to do business, it's like, on to the next one. Let's go keep feeding the machine. When you start to realize that when they first spend money with you, that is like just getting married, and now you got to maintain that relationship. What happens when you don't maintain the relationship? You get a divorce, and then you got to go back to the beginning and go back into the fish pond and go find another fish and try and, you know, wine it and dine it. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I got paid, on to the next one. So the customer experience is really how you set yourself apart. And obviously the key to doing this is in a systematic way, which we'll get into in a minute. But how can you set yourself apart from everybody else in your industry? And the easiest way for me is to at least get started is do the opposite of what everyone else in your industry does that nobody likes. So one of my clients, I'm a partner in a landscaping business. So anybody listening, you know, landscaping businesses, any home service business, really, they're notorious for not answering the phone, not responding to emails, not calling you back, not showing up on time, not making it easy to do business with you, making it, you know, changing the quotes, not showing up when you said you're, all these issues. That is the reason people do or don't do business with you. They don't really care how you cut the grass. They don't really care how you put the plants in. Yes, you got to do a good job, but all they really care about is the experience. Do they feel valued? So how can we put systems and processes in place to make that stuff happen on autopilot where the customers are just like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing ever? To me, like, every day when we call people back in our landscaping business, they're like, oh my gosh, thank you so much for calling me back. Like, this doesn't happen. Like, the bar is so low for you to go crush it. It's amazing what you can do. So that's kind of the first level of customer experience is just look at your industry. What does all your competition do poorly and do the exact opposite? Basically putting yourself in your customer's shoes. How can I wow them? How can I continue to build that know, like, and trust factor? So not only do they continue to spend money with me, but they'll spend more money with me. And then they'll tell everybody how awesome we are because we're the exact opposite of everyone else in our industry. So where this comes into play is right now, as of recording, it's 2020. The market has been, you know, doing really well for 8 to 10 years. Everybody is busy. Everyone is busy. Everyone's got enough work. But what happens is when the market starts to go down, all those people who didn't call their customers back, didn't follow up via email, didn't focus on the customer experience, they're going to wonder what happened. So if you look at, you know, the restaurant industry, everyone tries a new restaurant. But if you don't have a good experience, you're probably never going back. And the owner is going to wonder, well, nobody ever complained. I don't get it. Like, we had a good 2-year run. Well, it's because everyone wanted to try you. And now we have no customers,
right.
But nobody complains. However,
they're complaining over there.
Yeah, I don't go complain to anybody at the restaurant. I just go take my money somewhere else. It's not like I stopped eating out. I'm just not going to go to your restaurant. I'm going to go somewhere else. So when you can focus on the experience and how you make people feel, it's a total game changer. So really, like I said, the first part is just focusing on what does my industry do poorly? Okay, now we've figured that out. The second one is just doing like crazy things to surprise and delight your customers and catch them totally off guard. So like in our landscaping business, we'll send brownies just to customers who are really good customers and who we know, like, and trust. And they're like, holy cow, like my landscaping company sent me brownies. That doesn't happen. So what are some ways that you can really kind of surprise and delight your customers, whether it's just picking up the phone and checking in on them? You know, hey, Denise, it's been a little while. I just want to make sure everything's going well. Is there anything we can do to help? Doing things like that doesn't take any money, takes very little time, and it creates really an army of raving fans that will go do all of your sales and marketing for you. So that way you can, one, increase your customer lifetime value, but then you're also decreasing your marketing and sales spend and ad spend, and you're building a business that's kind of recession-proof because people are so loyal to you because of the way you make them feel. So that's really where I can be on a soapbox all day talking about customer experience, but it's all these things that don't really cost any money, doesn't really take a lot of time, and it makes you feel good because you're making people feel good. Like, that is kind of the point of doing something like this, is I want to make an impact. So anybody out there listening, just looking at your industry, there's probably 10 things you could do to set yourself above everyone else, and it doesn't take any bit of time. It doesn't take any bit of money. It just takes caring individuals who have empathy and then putting a process around it so that it happens consistently, not just when you're slow. When you're slow, all of a sudden you want to be everyone's best friend. And then when you're busy, you ignore everyone else. So doing it in a systematic way so it always happens.
Yeah, you're talking about lawn care, landscaping. I had a guy, and my stomach just kind of hurt when you were talking about it. I had a guy that he was starting, he was brand new, and he did a terrific job. I mean, he really did. I even built a website for him. We did a, it was kind of work in kind. I built the website. He wouldn't bill me for my yard for quite a long while. And then as he grew, and he grew very quickly because we did his social media, I did his website, I was working my fanny off for this guy, and he got so busy that he just completely dumped all over me and everybody else around in the neighborhood that I could find. But it got bad. It got really bad. And I kept saying, why are you doing this? This is, we all speak. When somebody says, hey, who did your lawn? Oh, well, it was so-and-so. Oh, great, thank you. What are you doing to yourself? And he wasn't happy. He said, well, I'm too busy. Well, you're also very fired. And I cut him loose. And it was a shame. I mean, it was so bad that at one point he went into my yard, somebody went into my backyard, and they didn't really cut it. I actually went out and took pictures of it and sent it and said, you've got to fix this. Well, we don't have time. I said, you fix it. I'm telling you right now, you fix it. Because I have the keys to your website, and I don't like to threaten like that, but I said, you don't want me shutting that thing down. He was here in 20 minutes, and he weed-eated the entire yard because he didn't have a lawnmower with him. And we mutually fired each other at that time. I said, here, I will never talk to you like that again, but don't you ever mess with me again either. It really got ugly, and it didn't have to. It did not have to. And I still feel bad about it. I mean, he really had a fast-growing, very good business that he just ruined because he kept taking the money, not giving service. It was wrong. And too many of
them. Yeah,
it doesn't have to be a landscaper. It can be anybody. Yeah. So I'm just warning you, just don't do it. Stand up to what
really
you said you were going to do.
Yeah, and it's really simple, right? Treat your customers the way you want to be treated. It's the golden rule we learned when we were 4, 3, 5 years old, whatever it was. But, a lot of business owners get in that trap, and then they're always blaming somebody else. Well, that customer's not a good customer anyway. They just complain, la, la, la. So now they're just feeding the monster of, I got to go get more customers to replace all the ones I'm losing. And they're always blaming somebody else, and they're too busy to sit down and figure out what's really going on. They probably know what's really going on, but you got to keep the hamster wheel going. If you stop, the money stops coming in. So really having the patience to build those systems and processes and understand, like, if he would have came, you know, and anybody, like, if you screw up or you don't do what you say you're going to do, humans are really forgiving.
God,
like, America's
God.
The most forgiving
exactly.
people.
If
so
he had just
said,
look, I'm really sorry, I will fix this, and, you know, even if you don't want me to work on your yard anymore, I completely understand. Thank you for the business. Thank you for, you know, the help that you gave me, the advice that you gave me. I'm really sorry. I would not have brought him back, but I would not feel bad about him either. So sometimes the simple, I screwed up, I'm sorry, is the best thing you can do.
For sure, yeah. I mean, it's all about how you react to that. And the successful businesses, if you look at the big brands and the small brands, the ones who react are the ones who just show that they care. And it's like, hey, Denise, you know, I know, yeah, we did get really busy, just wasn't able to get here, and I know I've got more on my plate, so I'm definitely going to be over there, apologize sincerely, I'll take it off the bill, whatever it is. And then it's like, okay, at least this person cares. Even if it's not the best fit for me, I'm not going to go, you know, spread the bad word about him. I'm going to appreciate the way, you know, the way he did handle things and that he does care, and he's just a little bit overwhelmed, and good luck to him. But, you know, you're never going to build a sustainable business, especially, you know, in that guy's case, what happens if he does get injured? Like, his money pipeline's going down real quick because he hasn't put the systems and the processes and the team in place to run that business and scale that business in the event something did happen. So it's a dangerous place to be, and it's hard to get off that hamster wheel because you got to keep feeding it. And if you don't keep feeding it, money stops. So how can you balance that? That's really where a lot of business owners get stuck.
Exactly. And that leads me back to standard operating procedures, because we have to have them. I mean, when I first started, because I was doing everything on my own, I didn't write anything down. It was in my head. And when I had to bring on a team, I went, uh-oh, now what? So I had to start writing and documenting everything and testing it and making sure that they could understand it. And then, of course, those SOPs, they're not static. I mean, you have to keep moving them. You have to keep adding to them, correcting them, deleting things. They're a very important part of your business, I think. So what are some of the experiences you've had with your SOPs and helping other people with theirs?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. It is so important. And I think where a lot of people get hung up, I've seen a lot of businesses say, well, I don't even know where to start, because I do hundreds of things every day, and I don't have time to document all those and create all the standard operating procedures. And you don't have time to do all of them, but you don't also have to do all of them at once. It's one thing at a time. So, you know, what I recommend everybody to do is, I call it the delegation snowball. So kind of playing off Dave Ramsey's debt snowball, it's the same concept, just get started. So Dave Ramsey says, just start paying off your debt and it's going to snowball. So it's like those cartoons where that guy's stuck in the snowball and he starts going down the hill and it gets bigger and bigger and faster, and you build off that momentum. So if you go back to the five systems that we talked about, the lead generation, the sales, the customer service and experience, the actual service you provide, and the operations, what I recommend everybody do is just get started. So the easiest way to get started is you just write down or type out every single thing that you do in each one of those systems. I like to do it in a spreadsheet, and you just literally type down every single thing that you do in Excel: lead generation activities, sales activities, customer service, customer experience, the actual service, the operations, every single task you do within those. And then, who does them right now? It's probably you. Who should do them? And not necessarily a person's name, because you might not have a team, but who should do them in your ideal organization? Should it be the account manager? Should it be the operations manager? Should it be the sales guy? Whatever it is. How long does it take you? How often do you do it? And then how bad do you want to get rid of this task and give it to somebody else? So once you do that exercise, and you can filter it however you want to do it, I recommend people just getting started with the easiest task. It could be the simplest task of, hey, turning the open sign on in your store, whatever it is, give that to somebody else just to get started and get that momentum. So when you have that snowball going and you have success with starting to delegate this to somebody else, then you want to do more, because it's almost like a drug. It's like, this is great, let's keep doing it. We're seeing results. People are happy. Let's keep doing it. So when you do that delegation snowball, you just go down one at a time. Okay, today I'm going to do one thing. I'm going to create one standard operating procedure for this activity in operations, whatever it might be. And human beings, we really overestimate what we can do in a year and we underestimate what we can do in 10 years. So we're like, well, I can't get all this done, so I'm not going to start. Or we're like, I'm going to do all this. And then we get frustrated. We get burned out. If you think about New Year's resolution people, it's like, I'm going to lose 100 pounds this year. And it's like, well, what is your plan? And how are you going to do that? Well, I don't know. I'm going to do it. But if you just lost 10 pounds a year and you did that 10 years in a row, you would get to where you want to go. And that's better than getting overwhelmed, frustrated, whatever. So just doing one thing at a time. So then the listeners might be thinking, well, how do I actually do that? So I use a process in my head. It's called PDAD, P-D-A-D. So first you need to perfect it. And I say perfect in air quotes. You can't see me, but it's in air quotes because nothing's ever going to be perfect. But what I mean by perfecting it is just actually doing it in a way that somebody else could do. It can always improve. It can always get better. But the key is just to do it in a systematic way. So you do that, and then you document how it is done. And the easiest way to document how it is done, especially if it's a computer task, is use some sort of screen recording software. So I like to use Zoom. It's free. And you literally just open it up. You hit record. It records your screen. And then you can do a voiceover while you're recording it. So you can say, okay, Denise, this is how we do this customer service activity. When we get this type of email, we go here and we click here and we do this and we do that and we send it off. So now you're giving them something tangible, whoever you give this to. It could be a virtual assistant, it could be a subcontractor, it could be an employee, but now you've actually documented how it is done. And the best part about it is, and I learned this from my corporate days, is when I had to learn something new, and when I started my first job, I literally sat next to somebody all day, watching them do everything they do and just writing notes nonstop. And then it's like, okay, Paul, tomorrow it's on you. You can do it. By tomorrow, I open up my 6 pages of notes, and I'm like, wow, I don't remember how to do any of that. I remember seeing him do this, but I don't necessarily remember how to actually do that. So then I got to go bug him, or I'm going to try and figure it out on my own. I'm not going to do it right. It's going to take too long. So what the video does is it really gives them the comfort, whoever you're giving this to like, it's okay. You can learn at your own pace. You can pause, rewind, fast forward. But it also frees up my time so I can continue to do these things. And the best part is it doesn't take any more time because I can just record it the next time I do this task. So that is a beautiful thing about technology, and you can do the same exact thing for in-person tasks. So if you use the landscaper's example, it's like, well, how do we plant this type of plant? Well, here's a video. So Denise, hold my phone. I'm going to plant this plant, and now all of a sudden it's documented. So the next time we have to plant this type of plant, we have the step-by-step video on how to do it. So that's the D in PDAD. So we're first going to perfect it, then we're going to document it, and then you're either going to automate it or delegate it. So automate could mean somebody, basically it means it's happening automatically. So it's happening automatically. It could be by human or it could be by a piece of technology. So figure out what the automation is going to be. Technology can do a lot. The caveat to that is it has to improve the customer experience. So a quick sidetrack on that, we've all called our cable company or a phone company or whoever, and we talk to a robot who says, hello, please state your name. And then you say Paul, and they say, oh, did you say Joe? And you fight back and forth. You start screaming at this robot, this computer. So that's automation where it makes the customer experience worse. So don't do that. Make a human answer the phone. But really focusing back on that customer experience in the automation, in the delegation, and then you're kind of off and running, and you're going to fail. You're going to make mistakes. Your people are going to make mistakes, but that's the only way you'll ever get better and get to where you want to go is by taking that action. Because if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to get the same results. So if you want different results, you got to be willing to do things differently, and you have to throw your ego out the window. Nobody is going to do it as well as you can, and that's fine because nobody owns the business but you. But if they can do it 80% as well as you can, delegate it to them. They'll probably make it better eventually. They'll have different ideas. They'll be looking at it from a different standpoint, and you will succeed. So, you know, really that's kind of what I recommend to everybody when it comes to standard operating procedures. Just get started. It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be a crazy high-produced video. Our phones are powerful. Our computers are powerful. Just get started. You can always make it better, but the only way to make it better is by getting started.
Exactly. I have a client we just built a website for, and one of her comments, because we do an awful lot of consulting when I'm building websites and doing social media for my clients, I need to speak in their voice. I need to know what's really really bothering them, because a lot of people will come to you as a business and say, okay, I need this, 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 and this. And once you get to really digging deep, you find out they didn't need much of that or any of it. They needed something entirely different. And she's got one of her biggest gripes right now is that people, instead of just doing what they're supposed to be doing, they will come to her and say, how am I supposed to do that again? So we are actually creating these standard processes, SOPs, to put in the back of the website, which is a client, the agency only can log in and grab these documents or grab these videos and leave her alone, basically. So that's one way of looking at it, too. You know, train your people, but if they don't want to be trained, put them in the back of your website or your wiki, your personal wiki or wherever, and say, here it is. You don't need to keep coming to me. This is not helpful to either of us. So let me help you. Tell me what you need, and I'll create a document or a video. And here we go. It's really not difficult.
Yeah, it's not at all. So, I mean, that's really a good point of once you start creating these videos, these standard operating procedures, where do you put them? So you can put them in the back of your website. You can put them on Dropbox. You can put them in Google Drive. But really, people learn when they're actually doing it. So I could watch you do something all day, and I'll get a really good idea, but I just need to be driving in order to really figure it out. Like, you can read all you want about how to drive a car, but you're not going to learn it until you get behind the wheel and go do it. And then you can kind of, oh, yeah, I remember them talking about this in class. But you can't just read about how to drive a car for 6 months and then hop in and go do it. You kind of have to just go do it. And training your employees is no different from your side and their side. So you just kind of have to go do it to learn by trial and error of how to become a better leader, a better manager, a better boss, a better mentor. And then they need to learn just by going and doing it. I can tell you how to do it all day, but it doesn't mean you're actually going to know how to do it. So just putting them out there and giving them and empowering them those resources. So it's like, hey, when you get stuck, that's okay. Just pause, rewind, fast forward. And if I did leave something out because I can do this in my sleep, just speak up and let me know, and I'm happy to help as well.
Exactly. And, you know, once I suggested that to her, she said, oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's just, these are things that you don't think of yourself because you are doing 100, you know, things a minute and a day or 100 miles an hour, it seems like. And because we do know what we're doing, it's easy to just say, I don't understand why you don't get it. It's easy. It may be for you, but it may not be for them. So do everything you can to empower them to feel confident enough to tackle the task or the whatever it is that they're supposed to be doing. I mean, you really have to be careful with your employees and give them what they need.
Yeah, and that, I mean, really to that point, when they're not doing something the way you wanted it done, or they're doing it wrong, or they're not getting the results that you want, it's not their fault, it's your fault. You failed to provide them something. So you didn't put them in a position to succeed. It's your job to do that as their leader, as their mentor. And we're always blaming somebody else. But if you take a step back and say, how could we make this better, or what could we have provided them, or asking them themselves, what could I have provided you in order to make that happen? You know, they're not going to do things wrong on purpose. So I tell everybody 99% of the people in this world are really good people. They're not going to come in and be like, oh, I can't wait to go screw up this business. It's like they're doing something not the way you want it to because you failed to provide them something and they had to guess, or they had to try and remember something you told them instead of you providing it. So if 99% of the people in this world weren't good people, we wouldn't be here. We'd all be dead by now. But we're all here. We're thriving. And we don't want, you know, we usually have enough pride, and you should have a good enough hiring process to know that, hey, they might not be the best person for the job, but they're not going to do things wrong on purpose. They're going to do them wrong because you didn't give them something, you know, and whatever that might be. It's different for every scenario.
Exactly. So when let's go back to customer experience and customer service, because these are really two very important things. And listen, when I threatened my poor yard guy, I was so embarrassed after that because, I mean, I was angry. He had been pulling this stuff for a long time. I kept just putting up with it. And what I learned that day is you cannot talk to somebody. I learned it again. When you're really ticked off, and I was ticked off, I would never, as a rule, say, hey, you know, I'm going to yank your website. I was so ticked off at me for being that stupid and that, you know, insensitive, that after he stomped out of here, you know, took his truck out the road, I called him and said, look, I'm really sorry. You know, that was something that I would never do. I promise you I'd never do that. You know I won't, and I apologize. And so he apologized. I mean, we're never going to be friends again, but I felt horrible. I mean, that came out of my mouth just as quick as it could, and I was appalled, really appalled. So, you know, sometimes you're your own worst enemy, but take an action to fix it. Don't just let it fester. And, you know, making that phone call wasn't easy,
for
but
sure.
Not making that phone call would have been much, much, much worse. So anybody who's listening, that's not the kind of business I run, but man, it hurt my feelings when I did that to myself, not him, to me, because I really let myself down.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're really passionate about our business, so even a different, you know, not that same scenario, but a lot of times you get customers come to you and you know you might be right. And you feel like you need to stand up and protect your business, but you also need to understand the best way to do that is to just listen, have the empathy, show that you care, because if you don't and you take it personally, and it's hard not to, but understand that these people really, they just want to be heard. They want to get it off their chest, whatever they're upset about. And if you don't listen to them and you don't have empathy and you don't let cooler heads prevail, they have a lot of power. They can go to social media. They can go to Google reviews. They can go to Facebook, and they can do brand damage to you, and that hurts. And they can also go tell all of their friends, and usually they tell everybody. You know, they'll tell whatever the quote is, you know, unhappy customer will tell the world and a happy customer will tell one person. It's totally true. So just having that patience and the bigger picture in mind of like, is this really important? Like, yes, I need to mitigate this issue, but am I going to get any further along if I just stick up and pound my chest and tell them how I really feel? No, you're not. So understanding what's really behind it, and a lot of times they just want to be heard. Yeah, they are upset, but it's all about how you react. And a lot of times you can turn that unhappy customer into like your best advocate. We've had many instances with our local businesses of somebody who wasn't happy, and we reached out to them right away. And at first they're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing that you actually care. I appreciate you reaching out and taking the time, you know, and then by the time the conversation's over, they're like, thank you so much. I've never talked to a business owner who is so passionate and really wants to do right. And I'm going to go tell everybody how awesome you are. And if you wouldn't have done that, they would have probably went and told everybody how much you suck because there was a misunderstanding somewhere, or, you know, you didn't meet their expectations, but maybe their expectations were different, whatever it was. It's all about how you react to those situations is what's going to drive your success. And if you look at really successful big businesses, that's why they're successful, because they do care. And I was just going through with a client yesterday about her mission statement, and she was very customer focused. So I said, well, let's just look at some of the mission statements of really customer focused businesses like Southwest, like Chick-fil-A, like Zappos. And literally all those businesses will do anything pretty much to make sure their customers are happy. And if you look at their competition, they won't. You know, the competition of Chick-fil-A is any fast food restaurant, and they don't really care about the customer experience. They just care about how many hamburgers they can sell in the least amount of time. And if anybody flies, you know Southwest is going to give you a better experience compared to any other airline, unless you're like the elite, you know, hey, I got a million points with American Airlines, then they treat you like royalty, but everyone else, it's like, eh, whatever, you're not important. So I like the Southwest model where it's everybody's important and we want to be the best business. And the way we do that is by serving our customers better than anybody else.
Exactly. So we're talking about, you know, how to turn your customers, your consumers into raving fans. It doesn't necessarily have to be a big blow up where you go and say, okay, let's fix this. You know, this is why we do what we do. How can we help you? What are other maybe less vocal ways or less obvious ways to get people to really, really go, man, you guys are great? I mean, the brownies I love. I think that's a terrific idea. I don't like brownies, but I like the idea of getting brownies.
Yeah, so really it's just, you know, showing your customers that you really do care and you really appreciate it and understanding they have a lot of options. So one of my local businesses I just sold at the beginning of this year, but it was a dog walking and pet sitting business. So people had to trust us with their loved ones. Many of our clients didn't have kids, so this was like their kids.
Right.
So we had to do everything. And dog walking and pet sitting is a huge commodity because anybody can go do it and it doesn't take any money to start up your business. But we really wanted to build that trust factor with them. So how can we do that? And we had a bunch of different ways, but just kind of walking the listeners through kind of the customer journey. Once they reach out to us, It's like, okay, we need to do everything we can to build that trust. And it has nothing to do with how we walk their dog or feed their cat. It's all about, can I trust these humans in my home when I'm not there with my loved ones? And the ultimate answer is yes, because we would do a lot of things. So right when they would reach out, you know, we would call them, we would email them and make sure that they see that we're on top of it, that we're organized, that we have our schedule straight. And then we would set up a meeting with them. And right after the meeting, we would, whoever was doing the meeting, either myself or somebody else on the team, we would come home and we would send them a video, online video of, you can use something like Loom or even just your phone and record it and put it on YouTube or whatever. But hey, Denise, it was so great to meet you earlier today. Really looking forward to, you know, taking care of your dogs while you're on vacation in Mexico. Rest assured, everything's going to go well. I'm just really excited and thankful for the opportunity, as I know you have a lot of options. So you do something like that, literally takes 30 seconds. You just hit record on your phone and you send it off to them. And that's like, holy cow, this is amazing. And then the next thing we would do is we would send them a handwritten note. So we would, I had a note card, you know, little kind of thank you note looking things, and just literally wrote them a handwritten thank you note, put it in the mail. And I just said, hey, Denise, thank you so much for the opportunity. We understand there's a lot of options out there, but really appreciate you trusting us with the well-being of, you know, Fluffy and Rascal while you guys are in Mexico. If there's anything we can do for you, just let us know. But thanks again. So doing things like that has nothing to do with walking a dog or how great we can walk a dog or all these cool things. But doing things like that, that just make your customers go, holy cow, I never would have expected this. Like, these people are my number one advocate. So doing things like that go a long way. And then when they are your customers, you know, just doing things to surprise them. So we were in the dog and cat space. So we would get canvases made of the pets. And for, you know, regular clients, we would just, one day that we're in their house, we would drop off this canvas, leave it on the counter, and just, they would come home and like, did you guys leave this? Like, this is amazing. So doing things like that, it doesn't cost a lot of money and it goes so far. The reason most business owners don't do it is there is no direct return. There is no measurable. Well, if I spend $5 on a canvas, am I going to get $10 back? The answer is yes and no. So no, it's not measurable, but yes, they're going to use you more. They're going to promote you to everybody, and you're going to build a brand that is amazing. So doing things like that in the customer experience, in the customer journey, I really tell everybody, just look at all the opportunities you have to, quote unquote, touch people. Now, not physically touch them, but what are all the opportunities I can build my know, like, and trust factor, whether it's picking up the phone and calling them, sending them a video, dropping by one day and just sending them, you know, a canvas, or sending them brownies in the mail, whatever it is, all those little things, they're like, I trust these people. And now they're my number one advocate. And I'm going to call them even when I don't need them. And I'm going to call them for referrals. So now it's like, hey, Paul, I know you do a great job, so I trust you better than anybody. Who can we use for X, Y, and Z service? And then you start to just really be the advocate for your customer and the advocate for other businesses who then in turn say, yeah, Paul sends me all this business. I don't even really know him, but I'm going to start sending people his way. So it's just treating people like the way you want to be treated and more. And obviously the key to all that, back to the conversation, is the systems and the processes to make sure this always happens.
Exactly. And one thing that I think a lot of people do rely on, I think, too heavily, and they should still do it, but still, you know, do the things that you're talking about here, is just, well, you know, I can give you some numbers to my referrals, you know, people I've worked with. That's fine and dandy. But I don't know about you. I'm not always real comfortable calling a stranger and saying, hey, what do you think about Paul? I'm just not.
Right.
So, and you don't really know, did I just talk to his sister-in-law? I mean, you don't really know who some of these people are and, you know, what their reasons are. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. It's actually a good idea. But it shouldn't be the only thing that you're doing to get people to know you, like, and trust you.
For sure, yeah. And really just kind of looking at the pain points, and you'll find these pain points because you're going to get the same question over and over. And if you get sick and tired of asking the same answering the same question over and over, so like in our dog walking and pet sitting, just perfect example, they would book everything was great, and then they would email us like the week before if they were going on vacation, like, hey, just want to make sure you guys are still coming on Monday. So now that's shows me it's another opportunity to answer that question before they ask it. So then we added the process of a week before, we'll just send them an email, you know, say, hey, Denise, super excited to go see Fluffy and Rascal next week. If you need anything or anything changes before you leave, just let us know. So then it's like, wow, they didn't forget about me yet. And then like the day of, we would send them a message through our messaging platform and just say, hey, we'll be there at 8 o'clock this morning. So things like that don't take any money, take very little time. And it goes so far to building that relationship and strengthening that relationship with your customers.
Exactly. One of the things that my groomer does for my dog, you know, every once in a while I'll board her if I leave for the weekend, and I'll get a text message and say, Abby Rose wants to FaceTime you. Okay. So I FaceTime with my dog. Why not? I won't FaceTime with my
right.
family, but I hope they're not listening, but I FaceTime with my dog. And that, I mean, I love the groomer. She has done terrific work with my dog for years. But that's just that one extra step. They are super busy. It's always chaos in there because they are so busy. But they can tell when Abby Rose needs to hear my voice, and they'll just jump on it and say, "Are you, you know, can you talk with her?" Sure, absolutely. You know, I love that about them. And it's just that little extra step that tells me they're really paying attention to how she's feeling.
For sure, yeah, and really that's the key, is all these things have nothing to do with the direct service or product, but it's just building that relationship. It's like, okay, if they're willing to do that, I know they're taking good care of her and, like, they really do care about her. And whatever industry you're in, it doesn't really matter. It could be, you know, any industry, but how can you show to customers that you really do care about them? And it's just doing all those little things that you're going to get those questions. Like, at some point, they probably got enough customers just – and my mom visited our house. She lives in Michigan. We're in Raleigh. She called Camp Bawa or whatever and just said, hey, how's Firecracker doing? And they probably get that question a lot. So what your groomer did is like, well, let's proactively show them how Firecracker's doing. So then they're not worried. It's like, wow, what a nice surprise. So just listen to your customers and what questions do you get more than once? Just put something in place to answer it before it becomes a question again.
Exactly. And, you know, you're saying that a lot of this stuff is not particularly expensive, and it's not. I mean, just picking up the phone and saying, hey, Denise, you know, can you talk to Abby Rose, didn't cost them anything in terms of systems or, you know, a tool or an online subscription that they had to pay for. And everything that you're talking about here is mostly going to be either free or low cost. So why not put them in place? And then, and I love what you're saying about what are your customers, your clients asking you? Because if you do hear the same thing over and over again, that tells you, or tells me anyway, that you're not being proactive enough, that you need to get out ahead of these things.
For sure.
Paul, this has been fascinating. So before I let you go, we've got about a minute and a half. Where can people find you on the web? And before I ask you that, let me back up a bit. Do you have any kind of last tips or advice that you want to share and then tell people where you are?
Yeah, so I would say wherever you're at, figure out where you want to go and just get started kind of following everything we talked about. And really the reason that I do this is obviously I was there once before, so I don't like seeing people go through that when you don't have to. And then really what kind of made an even bigger impact is my dad literally just retired from his business. He ran his own business for 44 years. He did hardwood floors, very manual work, never did anything like systems, processes, building a team. He was a one-man band for 44 years, basically. So his retirement plan was he just physically couldn't do the work anymore. He sold his truck, sold his tools, and that was it. So I don't want anybody else to have to do that. When you have a gift, you can serve so many more people. You just kind of got to get out of your own way, and you deserve to reap the rewards from all the work you put in, so you can sell the business, transition to someone else, the next generation, whatever it is, so that your legacy can continue to live on and you're able to really reap the rewards of all the risk and everything that you put in. So that's really why I do what I do. If you guys want to continue the conversation, if you go to paulmaskill.com/mastermind, that's the mastermind that I run, where I help business owners every single day scale their business so it can thrive without them. So paulmaskill.com/mastermind. It's a 2-minute application. Fill it out. I'll reach out to you via email. We'll set up a time to chat on the phone for 30 minutes or so, and then get you off and running so you can really leverage that business to do everything you want in life, enjoy vacation, spend more time with family, and reap those rewards.
Thank you, Paul. It really has been wonderful speaking with you, and I genuinely thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice that you've shared with our audience. So before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us. You can go to iTunes or anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio, and take us along on your journey. Paul, thank you.
Thank you, Denise. Really
get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.